Welcome back to Meet the Professors, and we continue with our program. After the case session with Drs. Huddis and Mackey, both faculty members gave brief presentations summarizing a key clinical issue addressed by the cases presented. The PowerPoint files for these presentations are included in the CDs accompanying this program. Dr. Mackey reviewed the issue made by the very first case, adjuvant therapy of the patient with an ER-positive and HER2-positive tumor.
I'd like to break down the problem into a number of aspects, talking about the prevalence of this particular biological subtype of breast cancer, just briefly review why the biology is unique, talk about what might be optimal chemotherapy for these women in the absence of adjuvant trastuzumab, and briefly cover what might be the best approach as well for hormonal therapy for these women. It'd be nice, of course, to know whether this group would have more or less benefit from trastuzumab than we might see from the ER-negative subpopulation. And then we'll try to reintegrate this all, put it back together, and describe how we might treat a given patient. So the problem is actually a very real one. Initially, we were always taught that HER2 positivity conferred a higher rate of ER negativity, but that doesn't mean that it's a rare problem. It represents approximately 11% of newly diagnosed breast cancers, because ER positivity constitutes about 70% of the problem, and HER2 positive disease is present in only about, by FISH application, 20 to 23% of the population in general. However, 50% of that population is in fact HER2 positive. Now, these patients had been addressed in a number of the clinical trials that have been reported in 2005, and I've just sort of summarized the four big trials that had been done with adjuvant trastuzumab, and these patients do constitute a substantial proportion of the population that was seen in these studies. The interesting thing about HER2 positivity in the presence of ER positivity is the biology is interesting. There are interactions between the estrogen receptor pathway and the growth factor pathway as well. Estradiol does have direct nuclear effects, but it also has membrane-specific effects which interact with some of the downstream effects of growth factor receptors. And this has been very nicely summarized by Kent Osborne in a recent JCO paper that I'd recommend to you. We'll talk a bit more about this in a minute. But in the absence of trastuzumab, what is the optimal chemotherapy that we offer for these women? The problem is that very few studies have actually had prospective tumor block determinations of ER status as well as HER2 status. Many studies have had the ability to call back a majority or a proportion of the blocks, but there really is only one truly good example that's looked at the effect in ER-positive and HER2-positive populations for reasonably recent chemotherapy. And so we're stuck with subgroup analyses and retrospective analyses in general to look at this question. Now, I want to caution you that subgroup analyses can lead you down the garden path. And here we have a study, the effect of carotid endarterectomy in patients with greater than 70% symptomatic stenosis. Now, it doesn't really matter what the question is, but you see the main effect is significant. But depending on what day the patient was born, you're going to have markedly different effects. And you might say, well, this subgroup may not be statistically significantly benefiting if they were born on Sunday. So this is the danger of subgroup analysis. You're going to introduce error in your interpretations, especially if you're dealing with small subgroups. So in the absence of Herceptin, what is the optimal chemotherapy? Well, we do have some prospective data from one trial, the BCIRG-001 study, where we do have benefit in the HER2-positive population and benefit in the ER-positive population. It was a FAC control arm compared to a docetaxel-based regimen TAC. The important part of this study for this question is that in the ER-positive population, there was a benefit for a newer chemotherapy over an older chemotherapy. In addition, if we looked at the HER2-positive population, there was marked benefit in the HER2-positive population as well. And since the blocks were uniformly obtained and centrally reviewed, we're pretty confident that this is a real signal. Now, we have not done the analysis for the subgroup that is both ER-positive and HER2-positive population in this trial. It was not protocol specified. Similarly, the NCIC MA5 had a retrospective look at the HER2-positive population where they seem to be particularly benefiting from the epirubicin as opposed to a non-epirubicin-based treatment. And this has been seen by others as well. Now, does ER-positive disease benefit from adjuvant trastuzumab? Well, the news from this is a definite yes. And there are four large adjuvant trials, the HERA trial, NSABP B31, NCCTG study, and the big BCIRG006 study. They all differ somewhat in terms of their design and the way that trastuzumab was used, but at the end of the day, on subgroup analyses, the benefit does include ER-positive patients. So here we have HERA, where there is clear benefit in ER-positive patients. The point estimate is to the left of 1.0. Similarly, in the combined analysis, there is no suggestion that there is an interaction with estrogen receptor status. Both ER-negative and ER-positive patients clearly benefited. And in 006, an interaction test was performed by our statistician as well, and hormone receptor status does not dissect out a population that does or does not benefit from trastuzumab. So the next question is, in the presence of trastuzumab, is it possible to individualize the chemotherapy? And the interesting thing with this trial was that there was an anthracycline experimental arm, the second arm, which was Adriamycin cyclophosphamide, followed by Taxotere Herceptin, and the third arm had no anthracyclines. It had Taxotere, Carboplatin, and Herceptin. So this regimen omitted the anthracyclines in the hope of less cardiotoxicity and on the basis of some preclinical data that it might work well. At the end of the day, we have an analysis at 2-year median follow-up, and both experimental arms are benefiting. The disease-free survival rate is 93% with ACTH, it is 91% with TCH, and the control arm of ACT, it's 86%. And these are statistically significant benefits. What was really quite interesting is that in a protocol-specified analysis of about 2/3 of the samples we were able to analyze thus far, there is a gene which may be a predictive factor for benefit from anthracyclines in this setting, and that's topoisomerase 2. Now, it turns out that in patients who have the HER2 amplification, there's a subgroup of them that also have co-amplified topoisomerase 2, and that works out to about 35% of patients in our study. So the amplicon, that little bit of DNA that's replicated, is long enough to include topoisomerase 2. Now, what that related to treatment effect is in the patients that had co-amplification, so both HER2 and TOPO2 amplification, that the ACTH patients did really quite well. AC followed by T was a control arm that did not do as well, and TCH did not improve on the control in that population. If we look at the population where there was no co-amplification, and this is about 2/3 of the problem, TCH without anthracyclines appears to be doing just as well as the anthracycline-containing ACTH. So this is the first suggestion, albeit it is a suggestion, it's not proven yet, that co-amplification might require an anthracycline. If you're not co-amplified, you may be able to get by without it. So when we ask about trastuzumab, is it possible to individualize the chemotherapy? Well, not on the basis of ER status. Perhaps TOPO2 amplification might allow you to pick out who needs anthracyclines, and if they're not co-amplified, they may do just as well with the TCH regimen. Now, can we make cross-trial comparisons to select an optimal chemotherapy regimen for use with trastuzumab? Unfortunately, the answer really is no. They're markedly different populations with different treatment strategies and different median follow-ups. So at present, you really can't pick a winner among the trials that we have, and the populations are markedly different. For example, NSABP had only node-positive. All the other trials included node-negative disease. BCIRG included only FISH-positive study patients, whereas ICH was allowed on the other three trials. So there are these minor differences that make interpretation and cross-trial comparison very difficult. If we look across all of the trials, the combined analysis, the 006 study, and HERA are all providing very substantial benefit to these women with an improvement in their disease-free survival. At the end of the day, it's obvious that benefit is being provided to these women. And until we have head-to-head comparisons among the regimens, it's very difficult to say that one is particularly better than any other approach. Now, to address specifically the question of patients who are ER-positive and HER2-positive, you must keep in mind that most of the adjuvant hormonal therapy we have for this population, all the randomized data, is in the absence of trastuzumab. So the relative benefits of tamoxifen or an AI have not really been explored in the presence of trastuzumab. So all we can infer is that perhaps naked AIs might outperform tamoxifen in this population. And that is appearing to be in part because of the interaction of the two pathways. Tamoxifen is a complex drug that in the presence of growth factor receptor signaling pathways can actually be stimulatory as opposed to inhibitory when it comes to anti-estrogenic effects on gene expression. And this can lead to tumor growth. And one of the very interesting mechanisms is something called membrane-initiated steroid signaling. And this is where tamoxifen, or estrogen for that matter, can actually interact with the membrane and lead through dimerization of the epidermal growth factor, as well as HER2, to a growth proliferation and anti-apoptotic signal to the nucleus, thereby circumventing the inhibitory effects of tamoxifen. In preclinical models, this effect is taken away by the addition of trastuzumab. So there's reasons to think that trastuzumab may add to the benefit of tamoxifen in the adjuvant setting, although that's not proven, and there's no reason to think that there would not be additional benefit from an AI in the presence of trastuzumab. So we can make arguments in favor of AIs or ovarian function suppression in early breast cancer, and there are four papers that are particularly persuasive. Certainly one of the most interesting is that the premenopausal population who have had lack of estrogen imposed by oophorectomy and the addition of tamoxifen did very well in the HER2 overexpressors. They particularly benefited from that dropping in the estrogen levels. And finally, we have a bit of a signal from the ATAC trial where the ER-positive and PGR-negative population, which may be a surrogate marker for EGFR-positive tumors and HER2-positive tumors, did particularly well with anastrozole as opposed to tamoxifen. So if we try to reintegrate all of this data, how do we treat the ER-positive and HER2-positive early breast cancer population? Well, acceptable options include regimens from all of the trials, HERA, the combined analysis, or either experimental arm of BCIRG006. There's no reason that you would want to pick necessarily one over other. But if you are going to be treating a postmenopausal woman with this ER-positive and HER2-positive disease, I'd suggest that you consider an upfront AI strategy after completion of the chemotherapy. Certainly in the absence of trastuzumab, there are reasons to believe that tamoxifen may not be as effective as an AI. In the presence of trastuzumab, that's still an open question. Now, if a woman is premenopausal, again, we have no good evidence that this population would particularly benefit from ovarian function suppression. In fact, the ovarian function suppression question is still an open one if a woman is also getting tamoxifen after chemotherapy. So at the end of the day, I would stick to the standard of care in the absence of randomized evidence that you would need to suppress their ovarian function and throw in an AI. In our practice, we prefer just to give chemotherapy, trastuzumab, and tamoxifen for the premenopausal population. Now, it leaves a couple of outstanding issues, the risk-benefit for adjuvant treatment for women with small tumors. In particular, if you have a postmenopausal woman with an ER-positive HER2-driven tumor, really, should you give them chemotherapy or not? It's an important question. But the only trial to include tumors less than or equal to 1 centimeter is the BCIRG006. And we don't have any subgroup analysis information on this population. So what do you do with that very common setting where you've got a screen-detected, small primary, node-negative, ER-positive and HER2, where you'd otherwise simply be giving them adjuvant hormonal therapy? Is an adjuvant AI enough? Well, the question is still open, but there is one concern about this population, and the best data actually comes from a Finnish study. It's a population-based study where they show that if the HER2 amplification is present, even in small tumors between 1 millimeter and 10 millimeters, they do markedly worse than the HER2-negative population by amplification. And this is the case, but ER positivity doesn't necessarily confer much prognostic information. It's dominated by HER2 in this population. So there's a suggestion, albeit not a straightforward analysis with the presence of trastuzumab, that this population might be worse acting than we might otherwise assume. So our take-home messages: ER-positive disease represents half of the HER2-positive population. Adjuvant trastuzumab is a very good idea, even for ER-positive disease, when given with or after chemotherapy and in the presence of hormonal therapy. And to date, all reported adjuvant trastuzumab regimens, I believe, are still very acceptable options for this population. And for postmenopausal women, I'd suggest that you consider an adjuvant aromatase inhibitor in particular.